Yeah, I wouldn't be
and
surprised.
maybe line up with this.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely a very when I've seen it, I mean I've been into it. I mean, and the part I was looking at was the sort of the well, I guess it was like you know these two the triangle sort of the mansion of God and then sort of the mansion of God from our perspective, the reflection of it. You know, and is in a sense two triangles. But when you bring those two triangles together, you get actually the Star of David, as a shape. You know, which was that shape. You know, the one that's wherever it is in the diagram there, which I'm going to give
Right.
the camera. Oops, yeah, that one. Oh, I get left and right now. That's
Right
shape
there,
there.
yeah.
Which is sort of two overlapping triangles, which is where you get this heavenly and earthly government and the reflection come out. But in the middle, that's what I was seeing going into this place. So I sort of stepped into it, and I ended up inside this blue sapphire cube thing, which was just like all the filled with the multifaceted wisdom and grace of God, and those sort of manifold wisdom and grace was in there, and it was just like all this sort of light and I mean it's so difficult to describe. I mean I don't know how people manage to draw it like that. I mean my attempt to draw it was pretty not like that, let's say. But when we all saw each other's drawings having stepped into that to look at, because this was a page on our book in our scroll, so you know we went to see, okay, are there any pages in our scroll that we need to open, and for coming up for the new year, where are we going? Is there anything, you know, that we need to know in terms of progression of where we've gone in on the scroll that we've got? And so we reviewed all the other pages that we'd seen during this year and the different things and how those had outworked. And we just did a review and then, okay, well, let's step in and let's engage this again. So we got the angel of the church to bring the book and open the book. And then we all looked, in a sense. And then we came out, you know, four, I think five of us out of the 12 saw this sort of dimensional shape on one of the pages. So it was pretty interesting, you know. So but now we've got to, you know, now we've got to step into it, you know. I mean
Right.
Sunday, I mean I stepped into a dimension on Sunday that I've not been before. We had an engagement with the four angels that we have in this sort of transformation period. And the four living creatures, and each one of them were based on the four faces of the north, south, east, west, and which was the four living creatures. And then we had, it was like an overlap of a court in heaven where this stuff was going on. And the lady here who does the flags and the banners and the colors, she set out these things on the floor. And I was just looking at it in the realm of the spirit while she was setting this thing out, seeing these arcs forming between these two angels, you know, the living creature and you know, we have these four angels, transformation, winds of change, sands of many waters, and refining fire. And they're there every week. They just come and they usually herald things and do things. But in this instance, they were just connecting with the lion, the ox, and the eagle, and the man. And so I could just see all these arcs forming. And so I just shared it, and I said, "Well, okay, if you want to come into agreement with this, if you look for an agreement to it, then you can step in where, because when there's two, you can step into that place of agreement where that arc is, and then make a three if you like to step into it in agreement." You know, so people did. I mean, I got drawn to Sound of Many Waters and the Eagle, which is where they were set out. So I stood over right in the intersection, and as soon as I stood into it, I was just like gone. I mean, it was like stepping through a door. And it was almost like I went deeper and deeper and deeper. That's what it felt like. And then I was aware where I was in the realms of heaven, and I saw some things. And as a result of going deeper into it, then I went into this higher realm. It's almost like the eagle took me up into this higher dimensional realm, and I'd never been there before. I mean, it was so hard to describe it, but it was, all I can say, was a fusion of everything into perfection. But it was an amazing thing. I mean, You know, and I know these things are just really starting to open up because of the governmental shifts that are beginning to take place for next year and the alignment of things that's starting to come into alignment for next year. So I'm pretty busy trying to coordinate it all and get it all down on paper and trying to figure out, you know, what is it that God's doing and showing and what does it mean? Because I think we can get caught up on the function, the form of it. Okay, what does it look like? Why does it look like a cube? Why does it look like a Star of David? Why does it look like that? You know, and reality is, what is the function? What am I supposed to do? You know, if this is a doorway or if this is a sphere of government, what is it actually doing? You know, and I think that's what, for me, that's what I tend to focus on. You know, once I've seen something, it's like, what is it for? You know, what am I supposed to do with it? Am I supposed to engage with it? You know, what does it mean for us? You know, does it mean something locally? Does it mean something regionally or even internationally? You know, I've got to find out some of these things. We've had some really interesting engagements. You know, my wife, who doesn't normally necessarily engage in all these things, she's engaged with this Sapphire Cube. And all of a sudden, then people start posting these pictures of Sapphire Cubes. You know, and having we engaged with it, saw it, I went into it, and then people start posting pictures of it. We think, well, something's going unrelated on. To you.
Hmm? People that are unrelated to you.
Yeah, oh yeah, just on Facebook, on the Facebook page. I mean, I'm sort of in probably, I don't know, 10, 15 Facebook groups. I get invited to go in these groups, so I just sort of, you know, see some of the stuff that comes through when it comes on as a reminder. And it was just like, wow. You know, and, you know, one of the things was, you know, someone was describing, you know, the order of Melchizedek and how this related to this shape and these cubes and different things, and basically talking about, you know, the sapphire pavement that Moses stood when he was given the what we call the tablets, but actually when you look back into the original Hebrew of it, it actually was talking about a sapphire cube. So Moses was given a sapphire cube which contained the revelation of the order of Melchizedek and the order that he was to bring from heaven to earth. Well, of course, in the process of him getting this, they start build a golden calf, you know, so the whole right. thing is smashed. And you know, it's like it comes out of the sapphire throne, and there's just so much stuff that your sort of Sunday school stories of the encounter actually don't really match up to when you go back and read it, particularly when you read it in the original Hebrew text rather than sort of our English interpretation of it. And
the Tanakh.
You know, yeah, I mean, and because it just gives a sort of a perspective that people don't, the English translators didn't really get, so that they sort of transcribed it as tablets. Now, you know, later on, you know, and it didn't actually say tablets. You know, that was the only way they could describe it. So it's quite interesting. These God is just opening these things. You begin to see that around the world people start talking about them, and you know, one of the other things my wife engaged with was was one of these hooded ones, you know, and they're sort of this mysterious hooded beings that they're not sort of like a weird sort of frightening thing, but they're quite mysterious, and sometimes they appear shrouded in mist or darkness or whatever, but they're hooded. And I know Mike Danforth, he's had several encounters with them. Significant encounters in his life, and we've had a number of people encountering here, and people keep asking me, well, who are they? Well, what are they? Why do they keep showing up now? And it, you know, it seems that they are engaged in the ancient past, and they're looking to point people into changes and shifts in direction. So they seem to turn up when there's a shift coming or a major directional change that's coming, and all of a sudden you get these mysteries. You know, the sort of those that are hidden in darkness that we're pointed to. You know, so I've had quite a few sort of people just saying, hey, I've just met, what are they? You know, it seemed really weird, but what are they? You know, so I've sort of tried to go and find out. You know, I've seen them, but I've not actually had an encounter with them in a way like others, but I have seen them. You know, I've seen them several times, and I had three times in one day. People just said, well, I, you know, in this encounter, I saw this. What is it? And they do seem to be quite significant in terms of shifts of direction, or particular into this sort of new order of things, and engaging in different spheres just seems to be a season for it. So, you know, I've had some interesting experiences around that recently. So I'm just sort of trying to coordinate them into some sense, you know, because a lot of it, I've had an encounter, my spirit has received a download of things, and I'm just like, but what is it? So I have to go back and meditate around it and look to see the engagement with it. But it's good, you know, really interesting, because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a real lot of stuff going on in the heavens. You know, a lot of stuff in the Chancellor's houses, a lot of shifting of things dealing with nations and the affairs of nations, and some major activity where people just seem to be engaging. Again, I've talked to people and they're describing something, maybe with not knowing the language to use, but when that, as soon as I hear them describe something or a place, I just know where it is because I've been there. You know, mm-hmm. And I've been there and I'm looking and thinking, what am I doing here? And I start talking to some people who are there, and I'm saying, well, why are you here? And they're like, well, we just felt the desire for the nations. Or they say things like, you know, to start administrating the affairs of the nations. And I'm like, okay, that sounds cool, because that's what this house is called, the Affairs of the Nations House, so you're in the right place. But I'm just a little looking around thinking, I've no idea what's going on here. So I see this big map, and this big map, all the sort of the nations are moving on this map, and the sea is sort of getting squashed out as things start to align. Really interesting thing. So you know, I'm working on some of those protocols, you know, but there's 12 houses and I'm sort of struggling to find the time to engage them all. I've been in 5, I think, so far. But there's protocols that link them, and you need to know which houses to engage, because there's an order that then releases things. You know, and I get responsible for that stuff, you know, and it's almost sort of like, okay, I'm showing you this because you're going to need to be able to explain this to people. I'm like, yeah, but I don't even understand what is it? You know, and there's all this stuff I see that I'm like, what is that? You know, so I'm going to have a busy
month. I have a question for you.
Hmm?
I have a question for you concerning this.
Yeah, go on. Because
reading in John 10 where Jesus is correcting the Pharisees because of their and the leaders because of their problem with him saying that he's the Son of God. And he reminds them, he says, "Is it not written in your scriptures that you are gods?" So yeah. I went back to Psalm 82, and I've been reading that. And, that's not only the spot where it talks about that. The very first verse, it talks about that God is in his place, but that he's among the midst of the mighty ones, and that he judges in their midst of the gods, it says. But then it goes on to talk about, I would say, pretty much the problems that are going on at that, I don't know if it's that time or if this is a prophetic scene in the future, and how it's vacant of judgment, it's vacant of order, and it's like he's putting it back on man that they're to take care of this. Do you think Psalm 82 is kind of what we're seeing starting to manifest?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think what I'm experiencing personally myself is that a while ago I started encountering the fire stones, and I started going deeper into the fire stones and sort of engaging, and I was given this seal, and then I was given a staff by wisdom, and I'm like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And then she took me through some doors in where these paths meet and where these sort of dimensional places are, and I sort of get to experience some things, and so I'm like, well, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And so she said, it's a Chancellor's seal. Okay. So, and over the period, as I've really looked to engage it, I've sort of seen the Chancellor's role and some of the things that I've been asked to do. And when I look into the courts and look into the Chancellor's court and the other courts, more and more I'm realizing is that the beings that are in those courts are there because we aren't. And they are, in a sense, caretaking those positions until we mature to a place where we can begin to administrate and legislate kingdom government, just like you're describing, where order and government comes into these spheres, in our dimensional spheres, but also in other dimensional spheres, to bring government to the earth, to bring that dominion, to bring change in the affairs of the nations, and to bring order back into it. You know, I mean, it sounds weird, and I think some people, it's just like, you must be just, taking some wacky backy or something, in this stuff. But, I know that there's been a progression of revelation, because I've not sought it, but I've been given it, and then I get then to, okay, what do I now need to do with this? So I get sort of an understanding then bit by bit. It doesn't sort of all come in one huge download or anything like that. It's almost like once I take a step and I accept something into my spirit, then I begin to resonate with it, and it draws me towards the outworking of it. And then all of a sudden, I engage with wisdom and I get taken to this place, and then that's another bit of the jigsaw puzzle. Then I've got to try and put it all together. And I believe that is our destiny. We are supposed to bring joint heirship or co-heirship with Jesus in the kingdom. We're supposed to bring government. We're supposed to have dominion. But the reality is, Adam and Eve and those ancient ones who were, I believe were actually Adam's children. When I went and asked them who they were, that's what they said. From before the fall, those who didn't sin after the same order, who, like Enoch, went through into the where the tree of life was and engaged it, they walked in these realms. They attended these courts. And I think you see it in Job, where, Satan came into the courtroom and where the sons of God were. And there was this, you get like Psalm you talked about in terms of an assembly, and there's a governmental issues and all these things. The whole of the realms of heaven are operating under governmental authority, and that's supposed to be us. So as we mature, I think more and more, there is a process, obviously, and we have to be faithful in lordship to engage kingship and then into sonship. And I think there's a few steps in between there, which I think where the whole chancellor's realms comes in and different things. So, yeah, I'm pretty much sort of, that's where I am right now. And some of this order of Melchizedek and these Metatron's cube and these shapes are all sort of some way linked to these governmental spheres and how they work, and some people, I guess, have different semantics for it or language for it, but it's the same thing, really. So a lot of people are saying things that I seem to resonate. Yeah, you're saying the same thing. You may be using slightly different language, or you're describing a slightly different experience, but actually it's really the same thing, because we all get sort of a unique perspective in these things. So we may see it slightly differently, but I know God is really at work, and he's looking to raise people up to have this governmental responsibility, and outwork it. I'm not surprised that you would be drawn to something like that at this point, because I think many people are starting to get to, it's a drawing of their spirit into, this is who I am. I've been destined to some of these things, and I don't understand it, and yes, this is sort of a bit out there, but something in our spirit just draws us to it. It's always been there. And, there is some thought, I know Ian Clayton talks about this, that our spirit was doing this before it came into this realm, and we're then now beginning to re-engage with things that we already know, because our spirit did some of those things. It's just when we became, in a sense, birthed into a body and into a soul, then that was disconnected to God and to those realms. And now reconciliation and the ministry of reconciliation brings us back into what always was, so that that now can be worked out into the what is, so that what will be in alignment with what was, which is God's original in purpose and intention for things. So it's pretty interesting, a bit weird, and quite difficult to describe, but I know God's doing an awful lot around these sort of issues right now, because I think there's a major shift coming next year. I really feel, you know, I feel 2015 is a real shift year in which I personally feel that it's the 40th anniversary of the whole prophecy of a billionfold harvest, and majority of let's say people who heard that have not done anything with it and have not prepared, and there should be now a Joshua generation ready to mentor that harvest. And for 40 years most people just either interpreted it that it was only for young people or this, that, and the other, and just basically have not prepared. And so next year, in August, is the anniversary, 40 years, a whole generation has passed. And God is really wanting to get Joshua and Caleb's ready, you know, for what's coming. So, I think a lot of this is because of these positional things that God is preparing people for. But, it's very interesting. So, yeah. Oops. Yep.
Some of us have become Joshua and Caleb in reality, physically.
Well, yeah. But I think that's interesting that when you look at the generations, you know, Joshua and Caleb were, you know, if they were 80 when they went into their inheritance, you know, and beyond that, you had anything from sort of 59 downwards were part of the next generation who they mentored and took in. You know, it wasn't just young people who entered in. It wasn't, you know, it was anybody from 20 up to 59 who were those who were going to go to war and take possession of their inheritance. You know, and the rest of them were going to go in, you know, from the women and the younger people, they were all coming in with them to get their inheritance. So, you know, Joshua and Caleb generation is not so much about age, but actually those that seem to be catching hold of this are of an age where they've realized that, hey, time is at a premium here. Let's not waste it. You know, we may have been wandering around, you know, not really getting everything, but it's coming. So let's make the most of what's coming now and be ready. And so, you know, in terms of the people that I'm engaging with, they are of a certain age. You know, and it seems to be it's that age that people have already either had their children or their children are growing older, or, you know, they've done the business stuff. It's almost like they've tried the world's thing. You know, it didn't really work out. It's not really satisfied anybody. And now it's like we need a new order. It's like we need to engage something which is our destiny. You know, and those of a certain age have more time to pursue it and a willingness to pursue it because they're not chasing after what the world can give. They've already gone past that, most of them. You know?
Amen.
You know,
good, good. That's good. I know I have a mountain I'm conquering as a spiritual and physical Caleb. I have a mountain that I've got my eye on. Not good. Just ministry, you know, not just physical, but certainly spiritual.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the order that's being presented. You know, we're not just crossing over into a physical realm. We're crossing over into a new order beyond the veil, so that we begin to engage heavenly government. I mean, and I think that is what a lot of prophetic voices are saying the same thing. I heard Chuck Pierce wrote it the other day, Rick Joyner, hey, we seem to be coming across up to the Jordan. You know, are we going to cross? I'm not sure they necessarily fully understand what crossing is, but the reality is we are coming to that point and the choice is being given again. You know, it's almost like 40 years ago, the choice was given to engage something and be ready. And actually now, for the last 5 years, I guess, there's been a real momentum build to, okay, we're coming up to another choice. Are we going to go in this time? Are we going to go into the fullness of our spiritual inheritance, which means engage in heaven? And, you know, and then we begin to administrate and see our inheritance on earth at work as we begin to learn how to take heavenly dominion and administrate it into the earth from there. You know, and I think that's the difference. You know, this stuff must be done beyond the veil, and Jesus has gone as a forerunner and opened up and said, draw near, come in to the Holy of Holies. Not just figuratively, but actually in reality, to come into the Holy of Holies and to engage. Yeah, which, you know, I guess is where, that's for me, is where my heart is, and, you know, encouraging people to get in there and to experience it and take their position of government, you know, their responsibility. Obviously out of relationship, you know, the relationship must be first, but it mustn't stay there. You know, we need to get our eye on those mountains. You know, that's what Caleb was. It's like, give me the high ground. Yeah, maybe full of giants stuff, but that belongs to me. You know, and it was Hebron that he went for, and Hebron was known as the best of the best of the best place. You know, and that's what is there for all of us, the place that God really has for us, our position, our identity as a son, which is that position of government, to really get hold of who we really are and to begin to be joint heirs with Christ. You know, it's like the whole thing is, you know, we are supposed to rule and reign. You know, we've been made a kingdom, you know, of priests. You know, we are a royal priesthood. Mm-hmm. And it's time we started operating in it, you know, in what it means to be a royal priesthood. And that really is what the order of Melchizedek's all about, I think. But it seems to be accelerating, for sure. Anyone else got any questions?
Do you have a question? Kristen's been real quiet for the past few times. Do you have a question?
You got something, Kristen?
There she is.
Music.
So, sometimes my own believability argues with itself.
Yeah.
So, can you're talking about during services and that kind of stuff, dealing with heaven, that I've been having a lot of experiences with people coming in, I mean, sitting right here in my house with me, yeah, or walking in on Sunday, that I loved your questions. They were awesome and very helpful. But sometimes unpacking, you know, that relationship can be really overwhelming. Mm. As if I am kind of right now.
Yeah. I mean, the relational side of it is a total dimensional shift from what religious systems give. You know, being in him and stepping into him and uh-huh, in really engaging love and what real love is in terms of how we resonate with love, and then we resonate with the fruit that comes out of love. I mean, it's a totally different understanding, really. And so the voice of God and the word of God, I mean, it's just nothing like we thought it was. You know, it's nothing like the religious teaching we've had. even some of it's been really good, has got us up to this point, everything has changed. It's like nothing is the same. And it's so, it is difficult for those who have not yet experienced anything to understand the dimensional shift that there's been. And when we're talking about relationship and intimacy, you know, we're not just talking about sort of warm and fuzzy feelings sometimes in worship. We're talking about engaging with the presence of God in a way which we're face to face with Him, or we've actually stepped into Him and gone deeper into Him, and now we're being clothed with Him. And it is such a totally different level of experience and understanding that some people who have not yet experienced at it are struggling. And then you get the enemy, of course, who wants to confront and try and rob and kill and destroy it, and he's wanting to, you know, put things on. And I'm facing similar things in some other benches where I've been engaged with, where there's warfare almost over issues that the enemy is choosing to highlight. And most of it's about the nature of God. It's about not the people, the religious system, do not know God. They don't know Him. They know about Him. They may have read about Him. They may have encountered in some way, but they don't know Him. And He doesn't recognize them either. And when Jesus said, you know, depart from me, I don't know you, this is where we're getting to. It's not about doing things for God. It's not about all the works of dead works of service. It's about personal intimacy and really knowing the love that God is and engaging with His Word, not just as a thing that's written on the page, but the vibrational frequency that's come out of heaven that's caused creation and is calling us back to alignment with heavenly government and everything else. I mean, it's just, everything's different. I mean, I can understand why people who have not experienced any of this stuff are struggling with it, because we're talking about things that they have not connected to and find it difficult to. And, you know, I've found some ways to engage with some of them by using scriptures that they do understand and then trying to open them up to see that there is a deeper and deeper and deeper meaning that they never even thought was possible within that. That it's actually real and experiential, not a theoretical thing that's written in the book. So engagement and actual experience of it is the key. And it's challenging. You know, there are some challenges, and there are some lines that are being drawn right now, and there are some issues over the nature of God which are really challenging. And one of them seems to be about God's, about judgment. That this seems to be the thing that's coming up over and over, that God is bringing judgment, that God is punishing, that God is this punishing God, that He's bringing judgment on the earth, and He's judging America because of this, and He's judging this nation because of this, and they just do not know the same God. You know, God has no punishment and wrath to bring on people. Jesus is taking it all. And if people choose to walk apart from God, then they open themselves up for access to the enemy to rob, kill, and destroy their lives. But God is not doing it. God is calling them and releasing a sound to draw them off that wide path onto the narrow path that leads into relationship and intimacy. And even in those who are caught up in this, you know, I just find it incredulous that people are talking about, you know, doing court cases in some of the stuff that we're doing to bring judgment on people and to bring judgment on cities and to bring, I mean, it is not, they don't know, they do not know the God that I've met. They don't know Him. He does not do that. He loves people. He is a God of love. And if people choose to separate themselves from Him, it's their choice. He does not send anyone to hell. He does not do that. He is a God, and it's His kindness that draws people to repentance. Not fear, not judgment, not punishment, but His kindness draws people to repentance. You know, and it's a major, major issue because it's all about who God really is. Who is he? And when you meet him, and when you experience being encompassed around with him and embraced by his love and embraced by who he is, all that stuff just falls away. You know, it's about grace and mercy and his desire for intimacy and relationship and fellowship with us. And that's the stuff which is seemingly just causing people to present this God. In reality, they're just doing a great PR job on the base, on behalf of the enemy. The devil isn't even having to do anything. It's the religious system which is presenting a God which no one wants. And we have to start demonstrating a God that people can be drawn to, hence being a city on a hill, hence being the mountain of the house of the Lord raised up so that everything else streams to it, which is living under a totally different governmental order in a totally different relationship and being in him. Being in him, embraced by him, not distant, separated from him, but being in him, and therefore being in the realms of heaven in him and ministering out of those realms of being in him. I mean, it is totally different. And, you know, and I can understand, you know, there is some challenges going on. You know, we faced those challenges earlier on in this year where people were seeking political spirits within operation and different mm-hmm. things were seeking to divide and separate, and we had to work through them and provide a culture of honor where people could work through them. But in the end, we had to give people the opportunity to, if they didn't want to walk this way, to walk another way, and we would bless them. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause
I'm right.
You know,
I'm right in the middle of that. So yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It is a very sensitive. It's a very sensitive place to walk.
Yeah, it
but,
is.
But you know, honor in its truest form is not without cost.
Come on, Kristen. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. There's a huge cost involved.
I'm going through the same thing, Kristen. It's. We're paying a price for this choice.
Yeah.
And not everybody is ready to just, you know, go, yay, I'm so glad of this new revelation.
You know? Yeah. I mean, there is a cost, you know, to walk this path. Same as Jesus took, as, you know, when you look at the prophets, they walked a path that ended up getting stoned, some of them. You know, it's like it is a path which the religious system doesn't like, and of course the enemy uses people to try and do it. In it, we must maintain God's heart of love. And, you know, what do? We don't go to a court to take those who falsely accuse us and get retribution. We take them into the court and we administer forgiveness. And we release them. And we release them genuinely into the blessing of God because we want them to be blessed. You know, that there is no sense where we, okay, yeah, I mean, people have said all sorts of stuff about me and they've accused me of stuff. And it's like, if I cannot genuinely want to see those people blessed, then I haven't forgiven them, released them from what they've said and the effect that it's had. And forgiveness is at the heart of this. God has forgiven us, full stop. There is no sin that has not been forgiven. And the only judgment that there is that he wants to separate that which is, in a sense, of us from that which is of him, so we can be pure and holy. You know, that's the judgment. It's a discerning and a separation of that which isn't of him and that which is of him, so we can be more like him. That's what it is. There's not punishment. And for us, you know, to create a culture of honor, we almost like have to allow those people to make their accusations and don't fight them. You know, when we faced a political spirit here, when we faced these questions, because we did. I mean, I had even someone interrupting in when I was preaching the message over it. They're interrupting and trying to get a point over while I was speaking. you know, and then that person then tried to go around the back door and get to all the leaders, and then they tried to do, to try and make email pronouncements of stuff, you know, if I had my way, it's like, I would have not done a very godly thing, you know, but fortunately, I was part of a bench of three, and I submitted the thing to, and we went and got heavenly wisdom, and so to deal with a political spirit, you come in the opposite spirit. A political spirit wants to be proved right, so you don't argue with it. You just present, this is the way I'm walking, this is the revelation I'm walking according to, you're very welcome to have a different opinion, but this is the revelation, I'm not going to argue over it, I'm not going to contend with you, but I'm walking this way. If you don't, if you're not in agreement with that, according to Amos, then it's going to be very difficult for us to walk together, but this is the way I'm walking. You know, we don't need to defend it, we don't need to argue it, because the argument just creates a greater political situation.
Mm-hmm.
We just state it and we stay firm, and that's it. And we bless those who come against us, and we continue to honor them, but we don't go the same route and try and fight fire with fire. You don't fight fire with fire, you fight it with water. You know, and so it's the opposite. And so you have to try and take the heat out of the situation. I mean, and it's really hard when you can see that spirit trying to influence people and trying to draw people away and trying to take people off the path. And we went through it. You know, we went through it last year significantly with the political spirit, and then again beginning of this year. And at first, it, you know, the first time was someone who probably didn't have the respect of others, but tried to get it, and essentially God just moved them on in the end. But we were able to pray for them and release them and bless them on their way. But then there was two other people who were actually in as part of our leadership who began to be manipulated and controlled, and others behind them were trying to control them. And again, we went through 9 months of giving them the opportunity of, let's get these stuff on the table, let's talk about it, let's see what are the issues, why are we struggling to communicate, why is it difficult here for you to share what you really mean? Because we wanted to create a culture of honor, but these people were just operating in secrecy. They weren't saying anything. But we knew that they were disapproving, but they weren't prepared to actually discuss properly in the right dimension. So we went through it, whether they were going to do it or not. We gave it every opportunity, and in the end, those people left. You know, but we blessed them. You know, we didn't force them out. We blessed them, and we gave them an opportunity to leave because they could not walk the same path. But it's really hard, you know. And some of those people were close, had close relationships, and really hard. I understand how difficult it is. I know the emotions and that you go through when you have to try and make sense of all this. And it's almost like, you know. So it was, you know, it just, it is hard, but it's like keeping the right heart and, you know, forgiving, releasing, you know, go take them into the courtroom, but bless them and just release them into the hands of God, you know. But it is really difficult, you know. I mean, I remember Bill Johnson telling the story that, you know, when he went into Bethel, it was like, you know, he had an agreement with everybody that he was going to come and he was going to bring this message, and then within 12 months, half the church left, including most of the leaders. Because although, yes, well, yeah, we want this, when it came to it, the cost was too much for them. But as a result of him staying firm, taking that course, then, you know, there was, it became a place where heaven was open, and, you know, that influence has gone around the world because they stood firm and didn't bow to the pressure that is put on, but maintained culture of honor, you know. And they are, I guess, the classical example of, you know, they've written the book and got the t-shirt and the hat, you know, with the culture of honor, you know. And, you know, and, you know, I've got to be honest, it's like, it's not my instinct. Just, it's almost like I want to deal with this stuff, because I think, hey, people are in danger. People can be influenced wrongly and taken off here, but you have to trust that God is in charge and that we begin to administrate and release the angels, and we do what we do in the heavenly realms, and we trust in the process that God will work things through. Even though when we're in the middle of it, it's not a pleasant place to be, and I feel for you, and I understand because I've been there. You know, if you carry any sort of mercy gift or any pastoral side, it's harder. You know, it's like I didn't really carry that, but it was hard for me in some ways. But I know now we're in a place of unity like we've never been. You know, we can step in and we can see the same thing in heaven. We can step in and do a judicial court case together because we've worked through the stuff. You know, we've got it all out. You know, we've dealt with why people struggled and things, and we talk about it. And if there's something, we don't keep it in the darkness. We bring it into the light, and we make sure we address it, and we do it in love, and we do it in a culture of honor. But we've never been in a place where we're experiencing the stuff we've experienced now because we worked through that. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it does get better, but that isn't much comfort when you're in the middle of it, I understand.
Yeah, I think the response that we give when we're in that kind of opportunity is a key for how quickly God's going to be able to work in their life to bring them to the place where he wants to bring them anyway. Yeah. They're just not at that position that, for whatever reason, that we are. I believe that it's at him that's at work in us,
yeah,
and that he started this work. He will complete this work, yeah, even absolutely, if it's after we go, right?
I don't intend going anywhere.
I know, but I mean, for some, I believe that the education is going to continue because they're going to get it. They're, yeah, going to have to operate in his kingdom.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to get them to leave this stuff behind.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think everybody thinks we're going to go to heaven and all of a sudden everything's going to be erased. We're going to know everything. We're completely perfect. And I think they're going to be in for an awakening.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I don't think people understand the inner court, outer court principle of the kingdom and how, you know, yes, I believe ultimately we will have all the tears and regrets dealt with, but actually we will still have to face that last day.
Can I jump?
Yeah.
What seems to be really humbling, and you nailed a lot of those things and those emotions, I think, is how much of heaven you feel like you're increasing in heaven, yet your brokenness here is hard to mesh those two.
Yeah.
I was telling my wife that same thing Sunday. I said, how can, in one aspect, I'm embracing God's love and mercy and truth and revelation, and in the other aspect, not really knowing how to even go forward in natural life, which it's like, it doesn't make sense to me because it's not the way I was taught.
Mm. But, you know, we're in a transition, and when you're in a transition period, the old doesn't work and the new isn't there fully yet, and so you're in this place where we're trying to work it out, and we haven't got a manual, and it's not like anyone's been here before, and those that have been here before don't seem to be able to really explain it in such a way that you can really get it. And it's like, so it's sort of like, okay, you know, but we've got to walk it out. And I think this is the key. We walk it out in relationship. You know, in a sense, the way up is down. You know, I need to understand that being yoked to Jesus, I have to learn that he was gentle and humble in heart. And he went through the rejection. You know, his whole nation rejected him. His family rejected him. I mean, it's like he went through that path, you know, knowing who he was, but in humility, totally surrendered to the purpose of God in it. And that was to take that cup, you know, and it was to embrace that life. I mean, think of the garden and what he was engaging in then, and then, you know, the cross. I mean, you know, fortunately he has done that for us, and he can carry our griefs and sorrows, so we must make sure we hand them over to him. Don't carry this stuff yourself. Let him embrace you, and let his love and his joy and his peace and everything who he is, just let that fill you, because that's the key. Yeah, it's all about him, and he's been there. He identifies with everything that we're going through, you know, and it does seem a paradox. Yeah, the more we seem to engage in heaven, well, the worse it seems to get here in some ways. But actually, it's because we're learning to, in humility, to I know our identity, and that's about promoting him. And it's like when we're humbling ourselves under the mighty hand of God, he exalts us. So the way to exaltation and the place of government in heaven is to be humbled under the mighty hand of God. And that humbling is an acceptance, actually, of who we are. It's not, well, I'm a worm and nobody. It's actually coming into the place where I truly know who I am as his son, as his daughter, as who he's created me to be. And, of course, that means getting rid of all the ways in which we've not thought that way and which we've not been that, and therefore the transformation process that needs to take place so that we are a gateway of heaven, so that first love experience doesn't stay in there, but the fountain of living water just flows out of us so that we resonate the frequency and the fragrance and the color of him. Well, we've got to get that stuff flowing through us, and therefore there's a whole load of mindsets and belief systems and patterns that the trials that we go through bring to the surface, and they identify those things that God just, we then have to yield and surrender to him. And you know, I've done more carpet time on my face in the last few years than ever before, you know, because even, you know, I find myself just in awe. And I just need to humble myself. It's just sort of, you know, the greater that God authorized me to do things, the more I realize the way I do them has to be totally submitted and surrendered. There's no room for my way of doing it. I'm not saying God doesn't use our redemptive gifts and who we are, but he has an image that he is conforming us into, which was agreed before the foundation of the world, in eternity, in his heart, and we're to be conformed to that image. And therefore, we must not be conformed to the image that the world has shaped us and the mold that the world has put us, but that mold that God has created, and therefore there's a change where we're coming out of one mold, and when you come out of a mold, you've got to be totally floppy, if you like, to go into a new one. You can't go into a new mold rigid and stiff. You have to be totally flexible so that when he puts you into a new mold, you fit the shape. And so sometimes it's quite difficult when he starts making it feel like nothing is solid anymore. Everything I believe is not solid anymore. Everything I was relying in is not solid anymore. It's just like everything's shaking, but actually what comes out is we become flexible and able to go and fit into the mold that he's shaped for us, and we become conformed by the transformation of our mind, our agreement with and resonance with the words that he spoke, so that we come into alignment with them, that then we begin to vibrate at a whole different frequency and we live a different sort of life, you know. But the shaking process and all that stuff, you know, is difficult. I mean, I've been through it a number of times, and you know, sometimes it feels like nothing is secure anymore, because my security isn't in what I know and isn't in what my theology is or what my doctrines are or what my church systems are. It has to be in him. So wherever I've placed any security in the stuff of the world or in myself, then that's the stuff which is going to end up making us feel pretty wobbly, because we've been standing on the sand You know, we need to be on that solid rock, and that is the process of transformation that takes us from where we were standing into where we were always supposed to stand and where we're supposed to be. But it is a huge process, and it's a challenging one. And in a sense, for those of you guys who I know you've got churches and you're involved with church, and that's a big challenge. You know, a lot of the guys that I work with, they're on their own, and they haven't got any of those other responsibilities, and they haven't got that stuff. So it's like, I know it's a huge responsibility, and it is a difficult place to be, but you have the opportunity to influence multitudes of people. And that's what you see. God has chosen you because he knows you can handle it. You know, he's called you for a time such as this. You know, and so hold on to that when it feels like everything's wobbling all around. Actually, you've been called for a time such as this. Well, Esther had to go through a fair bit of soaking and a fair bit of oils and fragrances put on her so that she would be prepared in a place to step up. And, you know, God is, in the midst of it all, he's just demonstrating his wonderful love. I mean, you know, just in being embraced by him is just an amazing experience, you know, and it's the reality of what he wants for us, you know, is to really know him, you know.
So, yeah, sometimes I wonder if I'm even going to make it through this current system that I'm in, because it seems like it's 180 degrees different from what we've been doing forever, as far as most people know, who have grown up in the church. Mm-hmm. And yet now we're saying, you know, this was good, but this was really in a way wrong. You're not to be necessarily discipled by me personally or anybody else. God wants to disciple you. And what? He's gonna be your leader. He's gonna be the one who tells you. And most people are saying, no, I need you to tell me what to do. I want you to preach how I should live my life. And I'm going like, I can't do that anymore, because I would be basically committing sin, because I know I can't do that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. But God, the plan is there, and if we continue to walk in humility and obedience, then when we get to these crucial points where things will shift, then we'll be in the right place for the shifts to take place. And you know, sometimes we look at how these things happen and see them, how they must have happened in the past, and actually the future does not have to be a repetition of the past. God can do it in a new way. You know, and if we are opening up the realms of heaven and we are becoming that gateway of heaven, then there is a way that God can do it which we have not seen before. You know, and that's for me, you know, is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the new order of things, you know, and that means God can do it a different way. You know, and I might be thinking, well, how am I going to get through this? But actually, things can totally shift and change really quickly. We just have to be making sure that we're ready to go with the shift, you know, and go, because it's there. You know, it's there. It's there. It's coming. You know, and yes, we may not be able to maintain the current structures and systems that we're in, but what we want is the relationship with people, where God will release a new order of provision and blessing and power and anointing and authority to be able to shift. I mean, let's face it, they couldn't stay in the wilderness. They couldn't stay in the old place. No, they couldn't stay with one person doing all the miracles. And they couldn't stay in the place where God fed them every day. They had to grow up and mature and take their rightful place and take the land that belonged to them and do it a new way. In other words, they're going to have to fight. They're going to have to take responsibility, work that. And that is dismantling of that old Moses order system to embrace the Joshua generation system. And you can't have both. Moses is wanting right now to usher people in to the promise. He does not want people staying on the mountains where they've been. Even if some of those mountains are really big, tall, and have got lots of money under them, he wants them to leave that and to embrace, hey, there's a land flowing with milk and honey, but you're going to have to go and take possession of it. And so it may well mean we've had to change how we do things. Now, I'm in a sense in a position where I had the blueprint and established the foundation of the church and planted the church here. So I have a level of government towards it, which is because I planted it, that's given me the opportunity of bringing these new things. But it's been a long process. It's not been a short one, and I've had to be aware. God warned me at the beginning not to race on too far ahead because you'll leave people behind. So I've had to, people think I'm going really fast. It's like I'm going as slow as I can, without dragging behind God. It's like I'm going as slow as I can because I know it takes time for people to embrace and walk that way. But actually, we can't be the same. Our system of government is different. How we do things is different. How we engage God in our meetings is different. Our worship's different. Everything's different. We don't pray. We have no prayer meetings, but we have court cases in heaven. We engage the throne room. We do, everything's different. Now I couldn't have just changed that overnight because people wouldn't have got it. They wouldn't have understood as much as I would have wanted to. And probably thought I could have done at the time, but actually was able to take a step, each step, to see those transitions take place. And if we keep following obediently, then God will show us at those points what we need to do and the changes that need to be made and the decisions that we have to present people. There are some times when you have to say, like Joshua, okay, choose you who you will serve. As for me in my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, I guess I'm in a position of being able to say, as me in my house, and not everyone can necessarily say that depending on what structure or system they're in. But actually, personally, we have to be able to say the same thing. It's like, here's a choice. This is the way we're walking. We're going to follow this path, and I want people to follow it, but if you don't feel you can right now, then I understand. And there's no retribution. There's no issue. It's like, if you need to be right at the back of this people who are walking it, that's fine. And I'm sure God knows what he's doing. And I know he's called you because you can handle this and because you will do and you will be able to lead people into this. Into their destiny and so that they then take on the place of authority for them in God. So, yeah.
Amen. Anyway, One more question. Is there a way that maybe I could find out, or because I've been watching especially the Atlanta group, but I watch several others, and like Peter, and I can't remember a couple other gentlemen. I would love to be able to maybe face or communicate with them sometime. Just to to talk with them because I hear their heart and there's almost like you get to know them because you hear their questions and you see their interaction, and I just again think it would help expand because unfortunately there's not a lot of people. George I can start to sit down with. I was able to have breakfast with Mike the other day and that was awesome, but it is a very lonely, it's like every 2 weeks that we meet, and when we first started meeting, I thought, man, maybe this is too much. Now I'm thinking like, wow, when can we move to once a week? Because it seems like things are progressing. and I'm sure you probably have already been realizing that's going to happen, that it's almost like requiring more of a, more of a group to continue to sharpen as you move in this. Because again, I have no grid for this. As much as I read the Word and I see things in the Word, I still have no real grid. And for me to even try to explain to people where we're heading, I can't even really tell them. Because I know you guys are going in a certain direction, but as individuals, we're personal. I know we may not go the exact same way you're going. Yeah, you know, sure. We've got our own mountain. We've got our own place, and but we're not seeing that yet. So does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I can certainly hook a few people up that would be good for them to maybe interact and engage and share some of the perspectives and as a support group for what's going on. Maybe that would be good. I can try and see if I can do that.
Okay.
You know, because I think it would be useful. You know, and you know, in some cases, you know, I am available. You know, if you want me to come over at some stage, you know, there's a number of groups around there. I'm open to come, you know, and even just to sit down and talk with you and, you know, I'm not talking about necessarily doing some big thing. I'm really happy to come and serve if it would be useful, you know. So in any way I can, you know, I'm up for it, you know.
Oh, good. I appreciate that.
Okay.